Hey everyone, Alan here, creator and host of Script to Screen. I've always been a fan of podcasts, and when I was still in college, I always wanted to host one, but it wasn't that simple back then. Nowadays, the options are endless, but there's only one that can help you and your podcast reach listeners and grow with your vision. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it is 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's exactly what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. Anchor has been Script to Screen's home since I first started the podcast, and I couldn't be happier. Not only is it simple for uploading episodes, but fans can also reach out to us by sending voice messages and be featured on the show. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. Again, that's anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. Send me a link when you're done. I can't wait to hear your podcast.
And now, a brand new episode of Script to Screen, live on Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM, made to be heard.
And welcome to a brand new episode of Script to Screen Spotlight here on Radio Lebanon and 96.2 FM. I'm your host, Alan Mahana, and today's episode is jam-packed with underrated failures from both ends of the spectrum, but I can't do it alone. I can't talk about those alone, so join me in welcoming the one and only Solo to my Chewbacca Han Solo.
Hi, Alan. How are you today?
I'm good, and so are the screeners,
yeah.
Apparently.
How are you, screeners?
It's Friday. Yeah. TGIF.
Let's go have some French fries.
Okay. You know what? I miss what's it called?
French fries and milkshake.
No. TGIF, the restaurant.
Okay.
Is that what it's called?
TGIF.
TGIF. Yeah, the restaurant. Hmm? So good.
In Lebanon, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's so good. Yeah. And I totally spoke in Arabic 2 seconds ago.
It's okay.
We're gonna let it go.
Machina, ça va. It's okay.
We're going to let it go. We're in the fall, which is awesome.
Yeah.
TV seasons have started. New seasons have started. Some will be starting
very soon, next
couple of weeks.
Yep.
Cinema box offices starting to kind of, we're starting to get pumped.
We're getting into award season.
Award season.
Yeah.
You know, the Christmas box office, which is, I'm always looking forward to December movies.
Yeah.
Those tend to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting December this year because no Star Wars.
No Star Wars, no Marvel, no...
Nothing. Like, we're going cold turkey on this one.
I think the biggest thing will be a DC movie. I'm not sure if it's December or November.
Aquaman, yeah.
That's it.
I mean, we've got the return of Mary Poppins, but that's about it.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that's massive. Like, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of good
Fantastic
movies.
Fantastic Beasts 2 comes out in November, but I mean, yeah. it's not a December movie. Yeah. You know, like, December used to be jam-packed, and this year just, it seems a little flawed.
It's a bit quiet.
It's all quiet on the December front.
It sounds like what was the thing? It was the house night before Christmas and the house was quiet and something like that.
So
I ruined it.
Yeah, it's all right. I do enjoy, this is the time of year where I do enjoy the countdown for Christmas though. Because Christmas is my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, well, I know, really like myself, I know that I'm going to be watching a Nightmare Before Christmas very soon.
Always.
You know, because you got to do that.
Yeah.
Like, at a Halloween or a few days after Halloween.
Yeah.
And then slowly start putting Christmas songs and watching the Christmas films, Elf, Home Alone.
Oh, you gotta do the Home Alones.
Yep. I gotta do Home Alone, Elf, and Die Hard. And Scrooged recently. I've watched it for like 2 years.
Scrooged?
You haven't seen Scrooged? with Bill Murray.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. That's a good.
You know
one.
That version of. That's a good one. So those are the like the Christmas.
That version
films.
Of the A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, that's hilarious. He's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's Bill freaking Murray.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Disney's Mickey's Christmas Carol. Have you seen that?
I think I've seen. Yeah, I have.
Like
when I was
Scrooge
a kid.
Is Scrooge.
Yeah.
And then like Goofy plays the ghost, the first ghost that comes to visit. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good one. It's such a good one. I think, you know, back when Disney was magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mickey's Christmas Carol. Good times. Good times.
Good.
So for any of you who follow movies and love movies, you are sure to have noticed that there are a lot of actors, whether it be male or female actors, that do tend to be a little underrated. We love them as the audience, but Hollywood doesn't seem to as much for whatever reason. So we wanted to share some of our favorite underrated actors and why we love them and why we think Hollywood doesn't. Hollywood doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna go ahead and start.
Yeah,
off.
Go ahead, do it.
So I'll pick. I'll start with the male actor.
Yeah.
Because we did two of each, right?
Absolutely.
So my favorite underrated actor would have to be Sean Bean.
Ooh. The guy that dies.
I don't know why Hollywood decided to give him this kind of a status or this kind of a legacy, but he's the guy that dies. He mm-hmm. is literally. I don't get it. He's so good. I mean, he was amazing as Boromir in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I think his performance was so captivating. Ned Stark, Game of Thrones.
Of course.
The first massive shattering of, this is that kind of a show.
The beginning of many heartbreaks.
The beginning of the masochistic relationship we have with Game of Thrones. He was also in a movie called The Island, mm-hmm. The Martian, Troy.
Yeah.
And he was also in GoldenEye.
Yes, true. He was 006.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was in GoldenEye.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is really good. He also had a short stint on television, a TV series that was only like two seasons long called Legend, which mm-hmm. was really, I mean, it was okay. It wasn't great. But I just don't know why Hollywood doesn't seem to like him. I love him. He's a very like, he's got this nice, like, especially now, he's got this like very nice paternal thing going mm-hmm. on. Like this, I don't know, brooding... old guy.
You know who he reminds me of a bit?
Who?
Chris Cooper. Chris Cooper. What was he in? Adaptation.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Cooper.
They kind of have, physically, they look alike, and they kind of have that calm and they're very poised. I do like Sean Bean.
He's like the most popular Lord of the Rings meme ever.
Yes.
You know, that one doesn't go to Mordor. You know, like he's the most popular Lord of the Rings meme ever. Apparently he's not that popular in Hollywood.
I don't know why. Maybe he's hard to work with. I have no idea.
It's weird. Because, I mean, the guy can act. It's not like he can't act.
He's talented. He's
very talented.
He's had some good roles. I loved him in Game of Thrones.
I mean, he is Ned Stark, dude.
I think he's one of the reasons why the show kicked off so powerfully. Yeah.
They had the perfect fit. But, I mean, it's sad that Ned Stark had the same end as Boromir.
But he does tend to die in a lot of his movies.
He does.
I don't know. I'm sure there's an article on YouTube that will tell you how many screen deaths he's had.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's
and
somewhere.
In James Bond and GoldenEye, he dies. Yeah, he was.
I think my dad, the last time he saw GoldenEye, he goes, "I have something funny to tell you." And I go, "What?" And he goes, "You know, Sean Bean didn't start his dying legacy in Lord of the Rings. It was way before."
Yeah.
And I go, "What?" And he goes, "GoldenEye." And I go, "Oh no." You know, like, are you serious? So it was a very funny moment. But like, yeah, so Sean Bean is one of my favorite underrated actors.
All right. Mine is someone you also really love and I just adore. It's Alan Rickman, the late Alan Rickman.
My heart breaks.
And Alan Rickman, I mean, already you have that voice. That amazing voice which brought so much to each performance, and the guy had range, and the guy did it all. He started off as Hans Gruber.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. Let's make this very clear. Yeah. One of the biggest reasons why he's one of your favorite underrated actors is because he is one of your favorite villains in Die Hard.
Well, yes, he's fantastic in Die Hard. He is. And he's Snape in Harry Potter, which is something you love. I'm a fan of Harry Potter, but I'm not a pothead.
Potterhead. Not pothead. Okay, those that's mean different. Very different things.
Okay, sure. So yeah, he was fantastic as Snape.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't think there was anybody could have embodied Snape the way Alan Rickman did by far.
You love him, you hate him, and in the end, you just cry for him, yeah. and you love that character so much. He's one of the favorite characters in the Harry Potter universe.
Oh, he's hugely beloved.
Definitely top three. He always makes it on that list. And there's a role I love. I think even more than in Die Hard and in Harry Potter, it's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which is not it's not a very good film, but he steals the show as the Sheriff of Nottingham. He has some of the best lines.
You don't think Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is good?
I think it's an okay Robin Hood adaptation. Kevin Costner was very bad for me in that movie.
Really?
His accent is all over the place.
Really?
You can feel him like...
Interesting. Like, I haven't seen it in a really long time.
Check it out. And check out his accent.
It used to be one of my favorites.
As a kid, I loved it. But I watched it again recently. It's fun. It doesn't lose that. But now
I'm certain it's going to be still a much better representation of Robin Hood than Russell Crowe's or the new one that's coming out.
Yeah, the one with why did I forget his name?
The guy from Kingsman.
Yeah,
Taron Egharts. Yeah. I mean, that looks like a.
I think it's going to be the new Arthur, like last year.
Which
flopped.
Yeah.
So Alan Rickman
as Charlie Hunnam, because I loved him as an Arthur, but yeah.
Yeah. So. As the Sheriff of Nottingham, he was hilarious. He was funny. He was scary. He was menacing. He had some of the best scenes in the film. He's a fabulous actor, and I think he has been overlooked. He passed away. We won't be seeing him in a lot of movies now.
But
go back, watch his cinematography. He has a lot of really good movies. He's in Love Actually. He has a very cute role.
I was just going to say, Love Actually, come on.
I think he was in Sense and Sensibility.
Yes, he was.
Those very kind of British films.
Yeah.
So he's done... in Galaxy Quest.
He is in Galaxy Quest.
And he also has a very... All his... You see now they're popping up?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I like had thought
they're
of some.
They're very different. He has such a huge spectrum of...
Absolutely.
Of roles.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
So
it's really, really fantastic. Well, mine is strangely enough, I wouldn't have thought that he would have been considered an underrated actor. But my second male underrated actor, favorite male underrated actor, would have to be none other than Ewan McGregor.
Oh, yes, I love him.
I adore him. The man, not only can the man sing, but
he,
I mean,
act,
but he can also sing. Because his performance in Moulin Rouge is just, his voice, bless my soul.
Yeah.
But he's also been in Trainspotting, which is a great film. Mm-hmm. He was also in The Island, strangely enough.
Yeah.
Because we mentioned The Island. He was in Star Wars, the Star Wars prequels. For a lot of us out there, he is
Obi-Wan
Kenobi. I'm one of these people.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm a big fan of Ewan's Obi-Wan. And he was also in a romantic comedy that I don't think did well in the box office, but it is one of my favorite romantic comedies. It's called Down with Love, and it's with Renee Zellweger. It is such a stylized movie. It's so funny. It's so witty. It's colorful. It's creative. And it's set in like the 1950s and whatever. It's super good. I love it. But yeah, I mean, Ewan is underrated. He doesn't get used a lot. You don't see him in movies constantly. Although he is a little less underrated than Sean Bean is.
Yeah.
He still counts as underrated. So for me, he's fantastic. I mean, recently he was in Christopher Robin.
Mm-hmm.
But that movie didn't do well either. Yeah. It didn't do as well as Disney hoped, I think. But I love his, I don't know, man. Like, he's one of those actors you just love to watch.
Yeah, he's, I think he's the kind of person you just want to go have a pint with.
Yeah. And then Angels and Demons.
Yeah.
he was so good in that.
Yeah.
But again, like, you love to watch him. I love to watch him on the screen. His charisma, his charm, his, I don't know, he just feels like he's someone who is genuine.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, close to the heart, genuine kind of actor, you know? Like, I'd love to meet him and be like, hey, bring it in for a hug.
What's up, man?
What's up, Ewan? What's up? That's my second actor.
All right. So my second actor is an older actor named John Lithgow.
Oh, hats off, sir.
This guy.
Look at again, you, the two British actors.
No, John Lithgow, I believe, is not British.
He isn't?
No.
I could have sworn he was.
Je ne crois pas. I don't think so, no.
Really?
Yeah.
That completely throws me off because I've seen him in a lot of
British movies.
Performances.
He was in a series called Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He is American.
Yeah, with
me crazy.
Yep. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Fantastic, hilarious performance, over the top and just crazy. And then you see him
I miss that show.
He was in Dexter. And yes. In Dexter, he was so good, such a bad, evil serial killer. The Trinity Killer back. And he was amazing. Yeah. And then he has The Crown. He did a perfect Winston Churchill.
I was going to say, his Winston Churchill
is with, for
competes
me, with Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And then he has so many movies here and there, and he's done so much, and he's been in the industry for so long. And I also think he's someone that can do a lot. He has these roles of psychotic killers, and he has these roles where he's now at this age, the grandpa. I watched recently Daddy's Home 2, which is not a good movie, but he's so cute and adorable. You just want him to be your pop-pop. And hug him and stay with him and let him tell you your stories. I really like this guy. I think he does have range. I think he does have talent. I think he Hollywood doesn't appreciate him enough. Mm-hmm. And I think people should watch his movies. So that's my second pick.
Well, awesome. We're down to our female actresses.
The ladies.
So both of my female actresses are actually from the television world, mostly. Yes. So my first one is Madeline Stowe.
Okay, yes.
She was in 12 Monkeys. She was in Last of the Mohicans. But she was also in Revenge. And that was kind of recently what kind of re-put her on the map. The lady is just so good. Mm-hmm. She's so beautiful. She's got that like sassy wit about her. She's not like I can't see her playing a damsel in distress, you know? Like, I can't see her playing those roles. And then her performance in 12 Monkeys is just crazy.
It's
good.
Massive. Wow.
It's so good. But again, like, Revenge is over and we don't see her anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, she's faded.
She's disappeared.
You know, and I think, I think she's definitely underrated. I would love to see her in some stuff. Like, I would have loved to see her in something like House of Cards. I would have loved to see her in, the, you know, like those complex, flawed, you know, like dark and twisty kind of roles. Because that's sort of what her character was in Revenge. But obviously Revenge is like soapy and like you're not going to get that range of complexity and whatever. But she was definitely one of my favorite characters on Revenge. Like, she was a character you love to hate, you know?
Yeah.
Victoria Grayson. Ooh. That was her name on Revenge. So, for me, she's one of my favorite underrated actresses.
Okay. I'm also going to go for someone who's more known on TV.
Okay.
It's Emmy Rossum from
Shameless.
Shameless. I was going to say, meet the Gallaghers.
You.
Yeah. Fiona Gallagher.
Yeah.
I think also the girl is very talented because Shameless is a very messed up kind of show, which is sometimes very funny,
hugely messed up.
Sometimes very dark, sometimes very depressing, sometimes very sad. So the show itself is a vehicle for her talent.
Yeah.
And she has those very lovey-dovey scenes and you love that character and sometimes you hate that character. And I love when someone can do that. And she's been in a few movies. But I think she's not utilized properly in these. She was in The Day After Tomorrow.
She was in The Day After Tomorrow.
Phantom of the Opera.
And she was in Poseidon.
Yes, she was, but...
Yeah.
So she does have her...
Yeah.
She is talented, and I want to see
and
her...
And she sings.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to see her take on a nice role in Hollywood. maybe a superhero character. Maybe she's, you know, she's age wise, she's convenient to carry a certain franchise. She's talented enough. She can do. She maybe can do
after,
a lot.
Maybe, you know, maybe after Shameless is over.
Well, she's
she'll be freed up.
Well,
right?
Here's what's happening. She's actually, I think this is her last season on Shameless. Oh. After that, she's leaving. So let's see what she does.
I don't like it when TV shows do this. Like when you start getting like some of your lead actors, when they start, you know, dropping off and you've been on for like 9 years, like, and somebody that is so
important,
the core of the
vital,
show.
Yeah.
Like,
it's her and Frank. I think those are the two like main characters. Hmm. Frank played by also a kind of underrated actor, William H. Macy. Let's see how
that's
show
really
goes. But
do you think she'll like leave or she'll move away? That's how they'll write her in?
I don't know what they'll do. I have no idea because there's nothing that points.
I don't feel like this is a show that will kill off characters.
It's crazy enough to do that.
Really?
But they might do it in a funny way, or they might do it, I don't know how, or maybe she'll just like move away and just let the kids, because she's the mother figure in the show,
yeah,
and maybe she'll let the kids just, you know, take care of yourselves. It's time for me, because she's always had that issue of, is it me or the family
yeah,
who'd
yeah,
like
that,
take care
that
of
struggle. Of,
that
yeah.
struggle. So, yeah. So who's your final lady?
My final lady is the one and only Elizabeth Mitchell.
Okay.
Elizabeth Mitchell was.
I'm a bit lost. Who is she?
She's basically known for her role on Lost. That's where a lot of us fell in love with Elizabeth Mitchell. But she was also in a movie called Frequency, which was a pretty good, kind of like sci-fi thriller. And she was also on ER for a while. And most recently, she's on my favorite sci-fi show, The Expanse.
Ooh.
Oh, you haven't gotten there yet.
No.
Yeah, she's on The Expanse, and her role is awesome.
Okay, I can't wait. Now I'm even more pumped to watch it.
I think she's so good. I'm not 100% sure range-wise how far she can go.
Okay.
Because the majority of the characters that we've seen her in are sort of similar.
Mm-hmm.
And this role, I don't know. I don't remember her that much on. It's been such a long time since I've seen Lost, but I feel like it is very similar to her role on Lost. But I love her. She's someone who captivates you on camera. Every scene she's in, she is a master of. She's very underrated for me.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's your
my final actress is? I think everyone knows her. It's Elena Bonham Carter.
Tim Burton's ex-wife.
Tim Burton, and, yep.
She's, although that was the ultimate couple, was it not?
It was a very interesting couple.
It was just, I mean, like a match made
they,
in...
They made Hell...
Limbo?
In the parallel universe. I think also, but I'm using this a lot, but she also has range because she can play...
Oh, she does.
She can play the cuckoo character, the crazy, deranged character. Like also, and she was in Harry Potter. She was
Bellatrix Lestrange.
Yep, there you go. That's why you're the Harry Potter expert.
Thank you very
She
much.
Was the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland, so also cuckoo crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have her in more serious roles like the King's Wife in The King's Speech.
Mm-hmm.
Very poised, very different, and very believable.
Hilarious. She played his wife and now she's about to play his daughter.
Exactly.
Which is talk about range.
Game of Thrones kind of like.
Yeah. Because she is going to be in the new season of The Crown.
Season 3.
Of The Crown.
Which takes place
a couple of years later. Yeah.
So again, this lady has range. She was in Fight Club. She was excellent in that. I think people don't appreciate her well enough. And she's a person who has a lot of talent and can do a lot of stuff. She can sing too.
Yeah.
She was
in
Sweeney Todd.
Yep.
So exactly. So fantastic lady. Fantastic list. Both lists, I think. These people, go watch their movies. Check them out. They have a lot of hidden gems. If you haven't heard of any of them, do check them out. Really.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you looking forward to season 3 of The Crown?
I still have to watch season 2.
Oh, it's so good.
I started a couple of episodes, but I had to stop.
It's so good.
But I do want to pick
I liked it because it kind of like stepped away from Elizabeth a little bit. Like it was more concerned about the people surrounding her, which is very interesting because you get season 1 is very much about her.
Yep.
And now season 2 is more about the people around her. So I'm very curious as to how things will change. And so, box office bombs.
Yeah, that, So what is a box office bomb?
A box office bomb is as follows. I don't know. I needed a jingle or something.
Yeah.
Okay. So the box office bomb means that a film is made for a particular budget.
Yep.
And then after being released in the movie theaters, doesn't even come close.
Doesn't do well.
Nope.
Doesn't do well, and boom.
Not at all.
Hence the bomb.
The
negative comes. Because, you know, sometimes, like, you're the bomb. So, like, good thing. Yeah, no, in this case.
It's a negative bomb. It's a flop. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So, it is a flop. That's what you call it. A box office bomb or a box office flop.
So, like, an example would be, let's say, recently Solo.
Yeah, I was just going to say, could that be our honorary box office flop for the episode?
Yeah, that's, like, sponsored by Solo.
Sponsored by Solo. How not to make a Star Wars movie.
A Star Wars story that bombed.
Yeah. Although I did download it.
Okay, and you want to watch it again.
I do want to watch it again.
Ah, that could be for, like, a second chance
kind of thing. A second chance kind of thing. Yeah. All right. So, let's go ahead and start.
Okay.
Since I started last time, you go
I'll
this
start.
Time.
I'm going to start with the classic film from 1980 called Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate is a movie that was talked about very negatively for many years because this is the movie that made the studio United Artists, which was created by Charlie Chaplin initially, close down.
Ay, ay, ay.
It flopped so badly that they had to close the studio and never open it again.
Talk about Apocalypse Now.
So it's directed by Michael Cimino, which is the director of The Deer Hunter. So in 78, he did The Deer Hunter, which was a masterpiece. 2 years later, he does Heaven's Gates. And it's a very long film.
Ouch.
The initial cut was like 4.5 hours, 5 hours long. It was like really,
well, I mean,
really
come
long.
On. Ridley Scott's, what is it? Exodus King, Gods and Kings was the initial cut was 6 hours.
Yeah, well, thank God it wasn't. So this is what happened. It stars Chris Christopherson, Christopher Walken, Jeff Bridges, Isabelle Huppert, big names. So it's big names, big director, everything for like a perfect movie to work. It had a $44 million budget. So we're talking back in 88. So it's in 1980, sorry. So a huge, massive budget. It gets $3.5 million at the box office.
Oh, that is horrendous.
It resulted in, back then, the studios were very director-oriented.
Yeah.
Directors called the shots and so on. And that's another reason why we shifted more to the studio
because
theme.
Because they couldn't trust directors anymore.
Because this is one of the movies that caused that. And the movie had bad press about animal cruelty, about killing horses on set.
Oh, jeez.
And it was just a fiasco. Now, with time and different kinds of cuts, people started watching it and started appreciating the movie a bit more. But the harm had been done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once you go that far, you can't go back.
Once you close something as iconic as United Artists, again, something founded by Chaplin.
Yeah, yeah.
It shows that it's a big boo-boo.
Yeah, massive boo-boo. Okay, so the first film, so the way I'm going to be talking about my films are essentially from least bad to horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start off with two of them, or the first one and the second one are basically very similar in how much they lost, but they were still flops. And the last one is just massive. So the first one is 13 Hours, The Secret Men of Benghazi.
Yeah.
Which I personally loved.
Okay.
I like it when Michael Bay does things that don't have to do with Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was made for a $50 million budget. Domestically, it grossed $52.8 million.
Nice.
And globally, so worldwide with foreign box office, the total amount it made is 69.4. So they essentially only made $19 million extra.
Oh my God.
On top of the budget. So this is definitely a flop. Now, I don't know why a movie like this would flop. On all counts, this is an action film that people should enjoy. But this was going around the time when, pro-American army films and pro-war, if you will. It's not really pro-war, but it does kind of... it does romanticize war in it to a certain degree. So I think this is why it didn't do as well, because people were just very tired of these movies. Although now when you look at the box office, you see a lot of war films coming back out. It starred John Krasinski.
Yep.
So this was essentially the beginning of the relationship between John Krasinski and Michael Bay,
mm-hmm.
Who would later help him produce A Quiet Place and then who would later produce Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
So I guess this is a good collaboration between these two men. I loved it. I thought it was a great movie. It had some great action set pieces. Michael Bay's directing is really good in this film. He doesn't do a lot of his typical stuff. It's just good. It's a good action film. The soundtrack is really good, but okay. Obviously it just didn't connect well with people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So that's my first one.
All right. My second one is because, okay, a box office bomb doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
Oh, no, it doesn't have
to. Sometimes it's a good movie that's maybe misunderstood.
Yeah.
And that's the perfect example of my second movie, which is...
And mine, too.
Yeah, which is Donnie Darko.
Ah, okay.
Donnie Darko is with Monsieur Jake Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal.
We do love this Jake Gyllenhaal here.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And it's directed by Richard Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a very weird movie, which I think you have to watch more than once,
absolutely,
to start and to get it. But it's a very philosophical movie,
huge,
poses a lot of questions. Very interesting film.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came out, it was budgeted at $6 million,
mm-hmm,
and made $517,000 in the U.S. box office.
Okay,
but $7 million worldwide, so it made like $1 million.
Yikes. Okay.
$1.5 million.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it was released in a limited amount of screens.
Yeah.
It didn't have a like very massive release.
Right.
So what happens with the movie is people hate it and it flops at the box office and it does really poorly and terribly. But then, back then, DVD rental was like trendy.
The big thing.
The blockbuster, I think.
Yep.
Whatnot. And people started to rent it and to watch it and rewatch it and started to get it and to start having conversations about the movie. And it became a cult classic. Classic.
Yeah.
And it's a very good movie with very good performances, with a very nice story, which...
Some great cinematography, too.
Wow, some great shots, exactly. And it makes you think and it makes you wonder and ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending is never clear. And it's never straight to the
point.
Very
ambiguous, yeah.
Many interpretations, and that's the beauty of the film. And I think that's what hurt the movie initially when it came out.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
Because let's be frank, a lot of people don't want to think and don't want to overanalyze.
Yeah, it's not that. It's that also endings are very, very, very sensitive to a film. I don't remember who said this, but there's this really famous person that said, you know, a movie is the most important thing of a... A film is all about the last act or something along those lines. Like the last act of the movie is the most important thing. And that's because that's the thing that you leave with.
Yeah.
And so if the last act of the film and the ending of a film isn't something that is satisfactory to an audience, the majority of the audience is going to hate the movie.
True.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And it involves time travel and parallel universes and physics.
It's very
meta and whatnot. So that's my second movie, Donnie Darko.
Nice. So my second film has a very similar kind of storyline behind it, as far as the film itself, not the narrative of the film. That was very confusing. So it is a really, really good movie. It just did not do well in the box office.
Yeah.
And the film is a stop motion animation by the name of Kubo and the Two Strings.
I loved that film.
And it was a box office flop.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was Oscar nominated.
It was, but it was a box office flop.
Wow,
like it did not do well in the box office. So it was made for $57.8 million. It made $48 million domestically.
Wow.
And I think what made it get to the Oscars was its international kind of... of popularity because of the fact that worldwide with foreign box office, it ended up making close to $70 million. But again, in comparison to the $57 million that it was made for, this isn't a big, it's not a big gap. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a big number change. It's not a big profitable number. You know, 57 mil and then you end up making 70 mil worldwide. It's not profitable.
Yeah.
Not as much as you would want it to be. But Kubo and the Two Strings is probably... one of my favorite stop motion animation. I think it topped A Nightmare Before Christmas for me.
Wow. Okay.
Because of the storyline, because of the way that it is handling the idea of death and the idea of family and the idea of storytelling and the importance of storytelling and just the way that it is done and the music and the mythos of it, it's just so beautiful. It's such a beautiful film and it's so full of heart. But for whatever reason, I just don't think that it connected well with the audience, because I think a lot of the audience thought that this was a children's film. And I don't think that this is a stop motion animation for children. I think this is a stop motion animation film for adults. I think the marketing was off.
Here's what's interesting about your two movies. Mm-hmm. So the director of the movie is called Travis Knight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, for Kubo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his next project is a Michael Bay project. It's Bumblebee. He's directing that.
Whoa.
I had read about it and I just double checked now.
Interesting.
So I wasn't that excited about Bumblebee, but when I read that, I thought that could be interesting. If he's going to bring that storytelling aspect, smoothness to the story.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So yeah, he's directing.
Worlds colliding.
Yeah. Plus it has John Cena, and it's about time people know, because we've discussed this, you and me. I enjoy watching WWE, and I'm not ashamed of it. It's fun.
Stop it.
Best just performances ever.
Stop it. Okay, what is your third and final film?
Okay, so I thought we had two movies, so I don't have the numbers for the third film.
Oh, okay.
But I'll tell you what it is. It's also very similar to Donnie Darko. It's Blade Runner, the first one.
Yeah,
and Blade Runner, the interesting story behind Blade Runner is...
We've spoken about Blade Runner. It was on the panel. We spoke about Blade Runner.
Yeah, exactly. And it flopped at the initial release.
Hugely.
And again, because...
people just didn't get it.
Because people didn't understand. And because there were so many cuts. There's like 973 cuts in the movie. The director's cut, the TV cut, the... So, but with time, again, with people rewatching it and really appreciating it, and when you dive into the movie and you see how technically perfect the film is, the music is just, it's so relevant to what you see on film. And the performances, Harrison, I think it's one of Harrison Ford's best performances.
Agreed.
Like as like really acting.
Agreed.
Because he's fun as Indiana Jones. I love him as Han Solo, but I can see that he isn't as intense as in Blade Runner.
I mean, if he didn't feel something towards the character, I think he would have never come back for the sequel. Whereas I feel like they had to convince him to come back for Star Wars.
Yeah.
This for him was like, yeah, sure, definitely.
Exactly.
Decker, right?
Decker, absolutely. And again, with time and cult following and cult classic, it became a big movie. And ironically, the follow-up, Blade Runner 2049, also flopped.
Yeah.
And
it did.
And I do hope
but
that
I love it.
I adored it. It was one of my favorite movies. Yeah. And I hope with time people will also watch it
appreciate
and start
it.
To appreciate it. And maybe we'll have a third sequel in 20 years. 30 years.
May we be alive.
Yes.
So my final film is what almost cost Disney its legacy.
Yeah.
It's a film. It's a sci-fi film by the name of John Carter.
Which I enjoyed a lot.
I have a weird guilty pleasure for this film as well. So it's called John Carter. It was made for $250 million and domestically in the United States only made $73 million.
Yeah. Isn't it John Lasseter? Andrew Stanton.
Yeah,
directed
Andrew Stanton.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you come off from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and then do John Carter and then go...
boom.
So then because of its popularity overseas, strangely enough, it ends up making worldwide, it ends up making $284 million. But again, that's only $30 million
profit.
That's only $30 million profit. It almost cost Disney everything. This was a huge loss for Disney, which kind of made them re-strategize and go into doing Frozen and Tangled, and that's when they revitalized their Disney strategy.
And this was supposed to be like a set of movies, the John Carter series.
Oh, yeah, it was supposed to be a franchise because it's based on a book series that are very much loved. They have a huge following, a huge fan base. I think this film's loss is down to Disney dropping, not making it sci-fi enough, and then also horribly marketing the film. I think this is a huge marketing error on Disney's end. But so this is it for my third box office bomb.
That's good choice. I like them. They kind of varied and different kind of movies.
I wanted to make sure that I kind of picked a bunch of different random, you know, different genres, different styles.
Yeah.
Just to show that in the world of cinema, you either win the box office or you die.
Don't forget that this is sponsored by Solo, a Star Wars movie yeah. that failed at the box office.
Exactly. Even Star Wars is not safe from being a box office flop.
Yes.
So, as always on our Spotlight episodes, we are going to talk about our unforgettable scenes for today. It's not a second chance. Hopefully next week we'll have a second chance movie. It should be yours because the last time was mine.
Yes. So and I talked. Yours. Remember how much I talked last time?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Do you want to do the rebuttal?
No. Let's talk about let's talk about a different second chance movie next.
Okay. So unforgettable scenes. I'm going to talk about a scene from Down with Love, actually, which is one of the films that Ewan McGregor was in.
Yep.
It's a sequence between Ewan McGregor and Renee Zellweger. They're having a phone conversation. They're in two different locations, but the way that the camera and the framing and the effects are, it makes them seem like they're actually getting a little sexy.
Physical.
Getting a little physical, if you will. Because at one point he is doing push-ups as he is talking to her on the phone. And they have him on the top side of the screen. And she is on her back on the bottom side of the screen. And, you know, so it's very innuendo. It's very filled with innuendo. It's very smart. It's very witty. And I remember watching this scene and having a huge smile on my face. Just because of the creativity, because of the, it's not innovative by any means, but it's just extremely creative and stylistic, and it's so juicy good. Like, it's just such a great scene, and it wouldn't have been this great if the actors were not able to
pull it off.
Yeah. It really wouldn't have, but the scene is so, so well done. It's so well done.
Nice. I think I've watched the movie, but I'm trying to remember it. I think they sing "Fly Me to the Moon" together.
I think so. Yeah.
There's a version where he sings and then she sings.
Or if not,
"Fly Me to the Moon," another Sinatra song.
It's something Sinatra.
It's a Sinatra song.
Again, it's set in the 50s. Yeah. It's set in that era. But it's so good. It's so witty. It's so good. I think it's a very underappreciated a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm normally not a huge fan of romantic comedies because I feel like they kind of repeat themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But this one just didn't. It offered something new in the way that it was in the dialogue, the witty dialogue, the speed of it, the rhythm. Just very, very fun movie.
Nice.
Down with Love.
Down with Love. Not sponsored by... Okay. So my scene is going to be from a movie I talked about from the box office bombs.
Okay.
And it's going to be from actually Blade Runner.
Oh, okay.
And it's the final scene of the movie after Harrison Ford goes into the house and there's a big fight with him and Roy Batty,
the character. Are you talking about the monologue scene?
Yeah.
Oh.
The Tears in the Rain.
Yes.
And I'm just going to read like four lines, the last four lines, I guess, from... his speech, his
You know, that actor is also very underappreciated too.
Yeah, true. We'll talk about him
next time.
So he's like, I've seen things your people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulders of Orion.
Wait. I think I have the Tears of Rain track here somewhere. Oh, I do. Wait. We're so going to do this.
We're going to replicate the replicas.
We're going to try to replicate this. We're going to try and play Tears in Rain as you read this.
I'm going to ruin this, but I'll try.
I mean, I'm sure you'll do fine. Okay. Here we go. What is happening? Okay. Ready for it?
Yep.
Ready, Freddy? Okay. I'm going to lower this and go.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships. I can't do this.
Ah, come on.
Okay, on fire off the shoulders of Orion. I watch sea beams glitter in the dark near gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in the rain. Time to die.
Ugh. I mean, I feel it.
Yeah.
Do you feel it?
I don't. I destroy. If anyone wants to see the scene, I think they'll be like, "Nah, I don't think we're gonna." But it's very interesting that you brought up the music because also this is something that intensifies that scene and humanizes
absolutely.
Because he is a replicant in the movie and it humanizes him and it makes us wonder What is it like to be human? What is it to be? Is he more human than a human being? Because he spares Deckard's life.
Yes.
And it's such a beautiful scene and so well filmed with all the rain coming. And like, and that final scene, like tears in that final sentence, like tears
in the rain.
In the rain is so meaningful and can be interpreted in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful scene and what a perfect, it's not the final scene in the movie, it's pre the final scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's towards the conclusion. Yeah, it's towards that final kind of the denouement, as you call it in
fantastic.
In cinematic terms.
And again, what I loved is they bring back that piece of music and Blade Runner 2049 when Ryan Gosling's... Well,
right, that version of it is the 2049 version.
Yeah.
It's not the...
It's very...
But it's very similar. It is very similar.
It's quasi identical.
You gotta hand it to the composer of Blade Runner 2049 because
he was so...
it ain't easy trying to. I think it was Zimmer, wasn't it Zimmer?
I'm not sure.
I think it was Zimmer, because I mean nobody could have done it. Nobody could have pulled that off aside from Zimmer. Honestly, I think it was. Where is it? Soundtrack.
Blade.
Oh, no. It was, let's see. Well, this is great.
Composer. Let's see. I think.
Music
Benjamin.
By, yeah. So it's Benjamin Wallfisch, but it's also with Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
And Hans Zimmer did the final mastering and the final kind of like touches and whatever. And I think that was a very smart choice on the studio and Denis Villeneuve's end, because Han is very influenced by, I forget their name, the original composer of Blade Runner. Well, this is
terrible. James Horner. No.
It's a band, I think.
Bob Marley and the Wailers.
I don't know. This is terrible. Well, obviously we have no right being hosts of Script to Screen moment. This is so shameful. But it's very similar.
It's very authentic.
It feels part of the world, which is kind of what Michael Giacchino did with Rogue One soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of quasi making it John Williams. And, you know, on the day that John Williams retires, if we're going to get more Star Wars saga films, I can't see anyone else besides Giacchino taking over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he does such a great, great job with it.
Yes.
So here we are at the end of our Spotlight episode. Of course, if you want to catch us again, you can do so tomorrow.
Yeah.
We won't be too far off.
At 3.
At 3 p.m. Same time, 3 p.m., yeah. Same place, Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Alamahana on my end and
had.solo
on his end. You can also check out our website, scripttoscreenpod.com. Now, there will be some changes happening to our website, so if you end up checking it out and finding that you can't seem to log in, it's because we're shifting things over to a better podcast hoster. We'll keep you updated. Yep. Don't worry about that. You can also listen to us on Enrami, Apple Podcasts,
Spotify,
Podchasers.
Podbean. You can see some of our episodes on YouTube.
Yeah, you cannot see Spotlight episodes on YouTube, but you can see News Hour episodes on YouTube. So make sure you check those out as well. We want to thank you guys so much for being great, loyal screeners.
Yeah, let us know what box office bombs you like or dislike. And some underrated actors and actresses. We love to have your feedback, your opinion. We want to interact with you guys.
Yeah, so you can definitely reach out to us on our Instagram, on our social media. You can check out the official Script to Screen page on Facebook as well, just facebook.com/scripttoscreenpod. You can also email us at scripttoscreenshow@gmail.com. And I think that's it.
That's pretty much it.
You know, we don't want to sound like we're begging, but we do love to hear from our listeners. We do love to hear from our fans. So make sure that you do that. And make sure you leave us a comment or your feedback of the show and how you're liking it, because we would love to hear from you as well.
Absolutely.
And you can do so on Podbean or on podchaser.com. Just look up Script to Screen. So thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you join us again tomorrow at 3 p.m. Make sure you go to the movies.
Watch stuff.
And you watch movies as well. We're counting down towards our you know, December films and Christmas season films. So make sure to prep a list of your favorite Christmas movies, because we'll sure feature that in our Christmas special, because I feel like it's going to be a two-parter this year.
Probably.
We could do a two-parter Christmas special, couldn't we?
We could.
You know, we'll start off on the spotlight and end in the news hour.
Yeah.
Like a crossover.
Sure.
Okay, I think it's time for us to leave.
I got very confused.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Alan.
And I am Han Solo.
And together we can rule the galaxy.
That might take too much time. Let's talk about films and TV instead.
That makes sense. Join us at 3 p.m. every Friday for Script to Screen Spotlight and Saturday for the Script to Screen News Hour.
We'll be discussing all the latest news from the film and TV industry.
And we'll also enchant you with some of the greatest songs and soundtracks out there. Script to Screen, only on Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM, made to be heard.